the Spirit really started to work on me. And I was obstinate until the end. So it was about 2 weeks before the Easter Vigil, and it was Sunday Mass, and my heart finally broke, and I realized, like, this is actually the Christian home that I'd been looking for. So I still had, again, the seeds had been planted. I was haunted by the cross, and I realized that what was not gelling with the charismatic experience, it just wasn't the worship that was calling out to me, but the Catholic Church was. That the liturgy, the rites and the rituals, even the fact of the artwork, it was a home that I never, well, it was a place that I finally felt like I could call a spiritual home. And once that happened, again, the coming into full communion with the Church, I realized also that this is actually a church that's looking for art. They're looking for art right now. They're not looking to buy from catalogs. They are looking for artists living right now to adorn their churches. Yeah. So again, once I came into full communion and realized, okay, they're looking for artists, it was like, all right, get me, like, when's my first project?
Well, hello everybody. Welcome back to A Place in the Conversation. My name is Dan Neiswanger. I'm the spiritual formation catalyst for A Place in the Conversation. And today we're making A Place in the Conversation to talk with Nielsen Carlin. Nielsen is a good friend who goes a ways back, and I'll share a little bit about that in a minute. But he is the head of the Carlin Academy of Fine Art here in Kennett Square. So, Nielsen, welcome to A Place in the Conversation.
Pastor Dan, I appreciate the invitation.
And I'll tell you, we are, Nick is here with us, and we're actually recording in the art studio. And I'm for those, you know, you can't see us, so I'm going to tell you that Nick is just looking all over the place and it is, you know, it's easy to be distracted here, isn't it, Nick?
It is, yes. Well, I'm fascinated by the whole idea of being an artist, and I've had some interest in oil painting. So to me, I just like the way it smells in here.
Yeah, and everywhere you look, there's something new. Yeah. There's something else to, you know, kind of look at and capture. So it's kind of neat. So Nielsen and I met, probably close to 7 years ago now. It's been a while.
Anything before COVID seems like a lifetime ago. So yeah. I lose all sense of time before 2020. So.
Yeah. It's been a while. And we met because I was at that time pastor of First Baptist Church in Kennett Square. And we had a mission statement that I was looking to have somebody paint a picture of. And I wanted it painted on a surfboard because we were talking about searching out and riding the wave of the Spirit of God alive and well and at work in our lives. And so I started asking around town and trying to find an artist who would do the work. And as I shared the vision for what I wanted to do, with one of the local artists, they said, oh, you don't want me, you want Nielsen. And they pointed me in his direction, and I'm just so thankful that they did. And so to this day, there's a surfboard that hangs up in the Welcome Center at First Baptist Church that Nielsen just did a fantastic job capturing the vision that we had continue to have. And and it strikes me that, you know, one of the people that helped underwrite it, Nick, is sitting across the table. Nick helped underwrite that project.
Oh, I never knew that. Well, now I met the patron, one of the patrons. So thank you, Nick. I appreciate that.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I have to say, by far, that was one of the most original projects I've ever done. So unique projects I've ever done.
Yeah, that's kind of what my wife said when I told her. I said, hey, this is what I want to do. And she goes, what's wrong with you? Who paints on a surfboard? Where are you going to find a surfboard? And my daughter was deeply embarrassed as we drove back from North Carolina with a surfboard strapped to the top of our car. She thought it was just utterly embarrassing. But hey, it all turned out well in the end. So anyway, but enough of that. So Nielsen, I just have a, like, so many questions that I want to ask you. Could you explain a little bit about what it is that you do?
Sure. Yeah. What I'm doing right now.
Yeah, sure, absolutely.
So, I'll tell you what. Can I give you the backstory to tell you how I got here?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, whatever you want to talk about. Yeah.
So I'm a lifelong artist. I've been drawing since I was 4 years old. I went to college for art, commercial art and illustration. I went to school in Philadelphia, the University of the Arts. So when I went to school, I was really directed at, because this was in 1988, I wanted to be an artist for Marvel Comics. In fact, I pictured myself getting out of school in 1992 and drawing for Thor Comics, which was my favorite at the time. But I got out of school and ended up starting in a career in general illustration. By the middle of my college career, I wouldn't say I soured on comics, but I realized that was a very specific industry, and I was a little concerned that it was too narrow a focus. So I moved into general illustration, and by the time I got out, I actually started working and doing illustration work for the Franklin Mint, which was, you know, your listeners might remember that was a company out in Glen Mills that put out collectibles, et cetera. I don't even think they're in business anymore.
No.
But over the years, I transitioned out of illustration, commercial illustration, and got more into the fine arts aspect of the career. And a conversion to Catholicism in the year 2000 directed me to specifically working for new and renovated parishes across the country. So that's where I find myself now. I work exclusively doing paintings, large-scale paintings, statuary, stained glass window designs for new and renovated Catholic churches around the country. So that's except for the school, I teach 2 days a week out of my studio, teach drawing and painting classes, but every other day I'm doing commission work for new and renovated Catholic churches.
And throughout the country?
Throughout the country, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so how do you get connected with these churches?
Well, what got me into the market, I mean, the niche market of working for churches, I mean, when I came into full communion with the church in 2000, I was really on fire to start working for the church. It took me 7 years to get my first commission. So in 2007, through a meeting with a fellow artist who happened to be a Catholic, he told me he was the liturgical design coordinator for this project, meaning the bishop that was overseeing the building of this basilica shrine out in Wisconsin was using this individual. His name is Anthony Visco. He still works, and he's an artist living in Philadelphia. Anthony was the one who was overseeing all the design aspects. So he was coordinating, bringing artists in. He was kind of making sure that the artwork was liturgically sound. So I ran into Anthony at a gallery opening. I hadn't seen him. I knew him, but I hadn't seen him since 1992. And when I found out he was a Catholic, I had become a Catholic since we knew each other. So I contacted him the next day after this exhibit, just shot him an email and said, "Hey, Anthony, you know, it was a pleasure meeting you. It was fun to meet a fellow Catholic who's in the arts, and he spent his entire career doing sculpture for the Catholic Church." So I shot him this email, just say, "Hey, let's get coffee together," and I sent him a few paintings that I was doing. And he called me that afternoon. He said, "I'm liturgical design coordinator for the shrine that's being built. I think you'd be perfect for the project. Would you be interested?" So that led to me getting the first big commission for the church, which was for the Shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe. It's in La Crosse, Wisconsin. I ended up doing four and a half by 11 foot high paintings of saints. And at the dedication, that was such a big project at the time. So the dedication was in 2008. I started the project in 2007. The dedication was so big and brought in prelates and priests from all over the country that after the dedication, that didn't just open the door into the church niche, it kind of kicked it down for me. So since then, certainly, I mean, like, you know, all industries, the projects come and go, but that was the first big splash, and I started to get work after that, and then once I started to get work, one priest talks to another. Now, of course, with online, and, you know, I never thought I would say Facebook. Thank God for Facebook. But I'm connected with so many deacons and priests and parishioners across the country, and I'm constantly putting, you know, projects up and, process paintings as I'm working on it, that I get a lot now of word of mouth referrals, but also a lot of people see me online and say, oh, there was this guy online I saw that does work for churches. Let's look him up.
Yeah.
So it's a combination of word of mouth, one priest talking to another, online people just looking up, you know, Catholic artists, and then a lot of social media hits.
Yeah.
So social media has been very good to me in terms of, bringing people to my door. And to be frank, there aren't a whole lot of people doing what I do.
Yeah.
I mean, there are tons of people. I mean, I think about it every year. There are tons and tons of people getting out of art school with fantastic skills, but it's a very, very small sliver that have any interest in devoting their career to working for the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
So
that's right.
I have the benefit of being in a very small pool of people. Yeah. So, yeah.
So the question that comes to my mind is, how much work did you get for doing the surfboard?
well, that wasn't quite as much. Yeah, that was a very specific niche type of job.
That was like a niche of a niche
well,
of a niche.
But look, I'm only 53, so I have a lot of time left. So that's always in my portfolio in case someone says, can you do this?
Yeah.
So it's always there. It's always there.
Well, I know there are artists who do custom paintings on skateboards.
Yeah. Yes. So. Yes.
Maybe there's another.
Oh, there are a lot of Catholic skateboarders, so who knows? Again, maybe I just haven't tapped that market yet.
That's cool. That's really, really cool. So part of what got you into this, right, is the conversion experience that you had.
Yeah.
You mind sharing a little bit about that, what that was like?
So again, let me backtrack, because I like to talk, right?
Yeah.
So I was baptized Catholic, wasn't raised. Wasn't raised Catholic, was actually confirmed in the Lutheran Church, and then my parents got born again and spent my teenage years in charismatic churches. Oh. So when I got to college, I just it wasn't for me. I was done with it. The message, the seeds had been planted, but the charismatic church was not a home for me. So the college process also being rebellious, I just abandoned everything. But when I got out of school, as I said, the seeds have been planted, so I felt the yearning for something. And the image of the cross always haunted me. So I ended up meeting my wife now when I was working at the Franklin Mint, and she was a cradle Catholic. So I started going to Mass after we dated for a year or two. I started going to Mass with her and her mother. And really, to be honest, and I said this so it's not like this is a revelation, I started going to Mass with them every week. Because I felt a yearning to be back in a church setting. Had no interest in the Catholic Church, but I wanted to have time with her and make time with her mother. Yeah. So that was my way of, spending time with my girlfriend at the time, but getting FaceTime with my mother-in-law. But over the years then, so that was about 1994, I started doing that. Over the years, sitting in Mass almost every week with them, I started to realize that the message I was hearing was not so distant from the message that I'd heard in the charismatic churches, in the Lutheran church. And of course, yes, rites and rituals are all different, but it was the centrality of Christ and the salvation of man. So over those years, I started to soften to the Catholic Church in general. So we got engaged in 1999, and if that number's wrong, I hope my wife's not listening, but my memory doesn't work the way it used to. We got married in 2000. So the year before we got married, I'd already committed to her that I was perfectly happy. I'd been involved in the Catholic Church long enough that any reservations I had from my Protestant years were gone. And I committed to her that I would consent to raising the kids Catholic. So in order to do that properly and to be a good father and live up to that commitment, the year before we got married, I enrolled myself in the Rite of Christian Initiation for Adults RCIA class at the parish we had been going to. For no other reason than to make sure that I knew exactly what I was going to be expected to do as a father raising children in a Catholic church. Well, over that year, the Spirit really started to work on me, and I was obstinate until the end, but about, so the coming into communion with the church always happens at the Easter Vigil. So I was obstinate until about 2 weeks before that. And there was no, like when you joined that, there was no requirement to become a Catholic. You just, it was the starting of a journey. Whether you ended up as a Catholic or not was on you. So it was about 2 weeks before the Easter Vigil, and it was Sunday Mass, and I just, my heart finally broke, and I realized, like, this is actually the Christian home that I'd been looking for. Yeah. So I still had, again, the seeds had been planted. I was haunted by the cross, and I realized that what was not gelling with the charismatic experience, it just wasn't the worship that was calling out to me, but the Catholic Church was. Yeah. That the liturgy, the rites and the rituals, even the fact of the artwork, it was a place that I finally felt like I could call a spiritual home. Yeah. And once that happened, again, the coming into full communion with the church, I realized also that this is actually a church that's looking for art. They're looking for art right now. They're not looking to buy from catalogs. They are looking for artists living right now to adorn their churches.
Yeah.
So again, once I came into full communion and realized, okay, they're looking for artists, it was like, all right, get me, like, when's my first project? But it took me 7 years. Seven years of making work on my own time to build a portfolio for whenever that time happened when someone said, okay, we have a job, you know, do you think you can do it? I had that surfboard in my portfolio to say, okay, I'm ready to go. Let's sign on the dotted line and get going.
Yeah. So. Yeah, you know, there's something about that, right? I really thank you for sharing that journey, because there's something very, of course, sacred about it. I grew up in the Baptist circles, right? So I grew up in the very Protestant side of everything. There's not a lot of room for mystical there.
Right.
There's very well defined belief structures, and everything fits in a box, and mystical just doesn't fit into that world. And yet that's where I'm comfortable. That's where I, mystery is,
right.
I'm drawn to the mystery of everything. And so in my journey, there was parts of Catholicism, parts of the contemplative that in my history, in my upbringing, there was no room for contemplation. There was, we're going to teach this, teach that. Contemplate, what is there to discern? I'm going to tell you what's right and wrong. There's nothing for you to discern. I'm going to, and it was like, well, wait a minute. I don't know, that you have a corner on truth. God does, but I'm not sure you do. I would rather discern. And so I was drawn to the people like the Jesuits,
mm-hmm.
and hanging out with the Jesuits,
mm-hmm.
and man, let me capture the mystery and help me be still, help me be quiet. And there is the art piece about it. And when you walk into a monastery, when you walk into a Roman Catholic church, and all of that is captured there. There is the mystery,
mm-hmm.
there is the, and it struck me, you can be sitting in a Roman Catholic church listening to the absolute worst sermon you've ever heard in
mm-hmm.
your life, and just your eyes can just go, and the Spirit can speak to you through the things that are on the wall and that are in the stained glass.
Even the architecture itself.
Yeah, even the architecture
Absolutely.
Itself. And yet, you could be sitting in the Baptist church listening to me preach the worst sermon you've ever heard, and you look at an eggshell enameled, colored wall, and you go, yeah, it's a paint in a wall.
Right.
But you miss the mystery, and
mm-hmm.
and there's just something, we have so much to learn from each other.
Yeah. Right.
And we miss that when we don't have conversations. Mm-hmm.
So. Well, and look, when I was, one of the things going through college that like I said, derailed me from the Marvel comics was, you know, taking art history classes and starting to see that the art world was a little bigger than the little box that I had. You know, and again, there's nothing wrong with comics. You know, for those of us in the 70s, that was our, you know, cheap access to beautifully done artwork and exciting stories. So I started to, you know, be introduced to, you know, the canon of Western art and realized that there's a bigger picture out there, and comics were a little too small for where I wanted to go. But what I realized eventually was, yeah, all the work that I was interested in, it was intrinsically Catholic in nature. Yeah. It was, you know, it was done for the church, commissioned for the church with a Catholic message. Yeah. So again, it all, everything was, I didn't realize it until after I, you know, joined the church that everything had been pointing me there. Everything had been pointing it. I just didn't see it. Yeah. I mean, even doing the work that I do now, I started out wanting to do comics, which are exciting stories of people in costume. And now I do paintings of saints, which are exciting stories of people in costume. So it all kind of was moving in that direction.
Yeah, that's
so
really cool.
I think I didn't have the vision to see it.
So I read on your website that you considered, I guess it was St. Teresa and Mother Teresa as heroes.
Well, that's the thing. I give a talk to local, you know, youth groups, et cetera. It's called Spider-Man's Got Nothing on Mother Teresa.
That's it.
And the gist of that story is there was a, I was up late working on a project, and again, I know the listeners can't see, but I have a lot of costumes, right? I keep a lot of costumes, and over the years I've purchased costumes and other materials so that I get models in and I dress them up and I photograph them. So there was, and I even have mannequins in here. So there was one late night, and I was doing a piece that had Mother Teresa involved, and I went out to Goodwill and bought an old blue sweater, and I was dressing up this mannequin, and in the background I had one of the Spider-Man movies on, and I was, you know, I was late and I was doing this, and I thought, yeah, Spider-Man's got nothing on Mother Teresa. And then that's actually when it clicked that, wow, I'm kind of doing the comic thing, but not comics. But it was the, again, heroes in costume. Like, I was still doing that. Yeah. Nothing had changed, except the heroes were different now. They were the real ones, not the make-believe ones.
So whenever, I can't remember when this was, but when the Pope came to Philadelphia.
2015. Yep, the World Meeting of Families.
Yeah. Yep. And you did some artwork for that. You were commissioned to do some artwork for that. What did you do for that?
So the Archdiocese of Philadelphia commissioned me to do a painting to commemorate his visit that is right now, it's in the cathedral, the cathedral in Philadelphia. So, but it was done for specifically for his visit.
How did you find that? How do you talk us through your process when somebody contacts you to commission a painting?
So typically, a client will have an idea in mind. Like in that piece, it was one of the auxiliary bishops contacted me. He knew through someone else that there was an artist living in Philadelphia that did work for the church, so it all seemed to fit, you know, as far as who I was and the geographical location that I was in. But typically, a client will come like he did with an idea in mind, and they might have a specific saint or the Holy Family with certain elements in it, and then I have to come up with some type of a sketch that incorporates those elements. And sometimes there'll be promptings. Can you, you know, make sure that the nice thing about the Catholic Church is because there's 2,000 years of art, there are certain templates that are there. Mary is typically depicted with a blue mantle and a red tunic or a pink tunic. So there are certain things that don't have to be spoken. It's just, you know, can you add this symbol or that symbol? So they'll come in with an idea, with a specific idea or, you know, person they want depicted. And then it's on me to come up with concept sketches that incorporate their idea in a visual fashion. Then I take it to them. They look at it, say, yes, no, can you move this? Can you adjust that? Can you add this? Once I get approval, then I will hire models, make costume materials, et cetera, to get the photographic material and the reference that I need to bring it to a high sketch, a very detailed sketch, to submit to the client for their final approval, and then off and running on the painting.
Okay.
So,
how long does that process take for, just on average? Because I know each one is like
it depends.
All over
it
the map,
completely
right?
Depends. Uh-huh. It depends on the complexity and the size of the image.
Okay.
So,
I have a question for you about the process.
Sure.
I read that when you're beginning a painting, you do a sketch. And in that sketching process, you pray and you meditate and you try to focus. Could you say some more about that?
Well, I mean, part of that whole process is, I mean, the creative process, you're trying to draw out something from the inside, right? Now, I mean, you're using, and again, we get to the Catholic idea of sacraments. It's like you have these physical, visible things that are used as a departure point for the divine. So, you know, anytime I'm starting a process, I'm pulling images and keeping other things in mind, but I try to keep the studio quiet so I can quiet myself, contemplate on the items in front of me, whether they be images of relics or saints, and just try to open myself to that creative process speaking through me. So
would you say that you're led by the Spirit as you're doing that?
Well, I mean, yeah, I would say that, sure. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure another artist that is not, you know, has maybe not the spiritual component of their work would probably say, yeah, it's just, you know, I'm just being creative. But, you know, I think part of that creative component is being led by the Spirit. So, I mean, all good things are prompted by the Holy Spirit. So I'd like to think that I'm channeling something divine. Yeah. So,
okay.
Yeah.
What's been the hardest piece that you've worked on?
Oh boy. Let me think. The first four pieces that I'd mentioned previously in the conversation,
yeah,
for the cathedral. I'm sorry, the Shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe, and it was really the only difficult part of the process was because I'd been doing illustration work, and I've been a professional painter since 1992. So it wasn't that I was, you know, wasn't used to making images, but it was the timetable and the fact that it was large scale. And I'd never worked large scale before. I mean, the largest painting I'd probably done before that commission was 30 by 40 inches, which is considered easel size. I could put on the easel. So the time constraints and the fact that it was large scale, that was 13 months of 7 day a week, long hours away from the family. So it was the stress of the size and the time constraints.
And what was the size of those panels?
4.5 feet by 11 feet high.
4.5 by 11. Wow.
Yeah.
And so where have you put them in here?
Well, that's actually one of the reasons why I'm in the studio I'm in right now. I used to have a studio up in the middle of town that was much smaller, but I had to find the space that I'm in right now because I needed 16-foot ceilings.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
I had to build a special easel just to hold the paintings.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Do you ever do murals, like on a wall?
Well, I don't do murals on a wall, but one of the jobs that I did for one of the local parishes, Nativity BVM, which is out in Media, I did a mural for the outside of their school, the parish school. But the way it's done these days, unlike old school, the murals typically are done in studio on fabric and then hung on the wall either inside or outside. So the parish in Media, there's an 8-foot wide by 22-foot high mural that I did in the studio and then was put on the wall.
Okay.
So, yeah. I think that's probably the largest piece that I've done, 8 feet wide by 25 feet high. So,
you know, whenever we first met, I just one of the things that struck me was that, like, this is one of the best kept secrets in Kenna.
Yeah.
You know, because I would tell people, I would tell people, oh yeah, we're having this artwork commissioned by Nielsen Carl, and he does religious art, you know, that's all over the country, mm-hmm, and, you know, done stuff for the Pope's visit, and people would go, who, what, where?
It's not for lack of trying on my part.
Yeah, well,
I understand it to some degree because I had. I had an associate years ago who was very highly positioned in a corporation. And I brought up something about the Pietà, Michelangelo's Pietà, which of course is the sculpture of, you know, Mary holding her dead son.
Yeah.
And he didn't know what I was talking about.
Oh, okay.
And it shocked me, but then I thought, well, no, that's not in his wheelhouse. That's not what he thinks about all day. And I take it for granted that, well, of course everyone knows the Pietà. Of course everyone knows these things. So it doesn't surprise me.
Yeah,
unless you're looking for the work, and, you know, or you're involved in art, then, yeah, I mean, I just fly under the radar.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. It didn't surprise me. The more I thought about it, it didn't surprise me either because it's so specialized and it's so, it's a narrow focus.
Right.
But, man, what a gift for a community, which is one of the reasons I wanted to sit down and talk with you, and was just say, man, what a gift Kenneth has. in you,
right.
And in the academy,
thank you.
And just it that you have here. And so talk a little bit about the art classes that you offer.
Sure. I would definitely like that more people in Kennett knew about, and I try very hard to get the word out there. And I've been here in Kennett for 26 years teaching. So no excuse for anyone listening. You should know about me by now. It's not my fault at this point. It's yours. So I mentioned I got out of school I went to school from 88 to 92 and got a degree in illustration. And I got out of school recognizing, one thing I recognized, and I was very fortunate, I started getting work within a month of graduating. But I realized very quickly that my skills after 4 years were not where they needed to be to get me where I wanted to go. For a number of reasons, we can get into on another podcast about why the institutional art schools have failed the students. But I realized very quickly that I did not have the skill set to take me where I wanted to go. So I started looking around, and I was poised to put myself back into school for a master's degree, thinking that that would solve the problem. When I ran across, I took a class at the Chester County Art Association. It was like a final gasp, like, all right, let me just see if I can find someone who can teach me what I need. And sure enough, I met a teacher there. His name is Michael Trainis. He lives in Westchester. He still lives in Westchester. He was teaching class in oil painting. And within 30 minutes, I thought, where have you been my whole life? Well, it turns out, so this was in, I think, 1994, that he immediately directed me to the man he was studying with at the time in Manhattan, a man named Michael Aviano, who's still alive. He's 95 years old. So it took me about a year for me to get up the courage to start making the trip up to Manhattan to take classes with this guy. So in 1995, I started one day a week. He put me right back to the beginning, because the only way I was going to iron out the deficiencies that I inherited from art school, from the institutional art school, was to go through a comprehensive curriculum where we didn't skip anything. There was no rush. It took you as long as it took you to finish the education, or as short as it took you to finish the education. So for 5 years, I went up 4 years, one day a week, took the train on Fridays up to Manhattan for a six-hour class. The last year, I went up 2 days a week. I went up Friday, turned around, came back, got up Saturday morning, went up again. And it was similar to what I teach. And I adopted the model from him. It was nine people in his Upper West Side of Manhattan studio. It was an apartment/studio. And he had a set curriculum, very classical, very traditional. You only moved on to another project when the master said, yeah, you've mastered the discipline and move on. So it was during the course of going up there where I was coming back on the train, and I was fuming coming back on the train. It was like 1 a.m. on a Friday night, and I wasn't mad at the whole process. I loved it. It was an adventure. Going up there was an adventure, and I loved Aviano, and he unlocked so many things in my head, and he's by far the best teacher I have ever had. I was fuming because I thought, why do I have to go to Manhattan to get this? This is not rocket science. All of this information has been known. Why didn't I get this in my 4 years of art school that I paid out of pocket for and went into debt for? And then the bulb went off on that train back, you know, New Jersey Transit. I thought, duh. I mean, my grandfather used to say, if you see a problem, don't complain about it, fix it. I thought, well, why don't I bring what I'm learning in Manhattan to Kennett Square, Pennsylvania? And in 1997, that's what I did. In the basement of my condo I was renting with a buddy of mine, or townhouse I was renting, I started with two students and built it from there.
Yeah.
So I planted my flag. I thought, okay, I'm going to bring Manhattan old world traditional art education to Kennett Square, Pennsylvania. And I've been here ever since.
Well, that's fantastic. So, yeah. That's fantastic. And there will be a link here in the podcast where that if you are interested in the art studio, you'll be able to follow and connect and find out more about that. And would that be something that if there was a student, child, teenager who likes comics,
mm-hmm.
like that could be an inroad for them? That could be a starting for them?
Absolutely, because it doesn't matter. I have plenty of teens right now, and I tell their parents when they come in, you know, when I was going through school, it was before the computer revolution. We had computers. I mean, we're talking about the 90s. But the computer revolution in commercial art really took off in the mid-90s. So when I got out of school, we were still doing all, it was all hand-on work. I mean, you had your Xerox machine, and you had scanners, but you didn't, you know, people weren't doing Photoshop illustrations, et cetera. So when I went to school, if you were in fine arts or commercial art being illustration or graphic design, et cetera, you could take either one of those degrees or areas of focus. A commercial artist could go into fine art, a fine artist could go into commercial art, right, with very little problem. Well, once the computer revolution hit in the 90s, now when you go to school, you need to decide, am I going to go into fine art? Because that means I'm going to be doing like old world painting. Or am I going to go into commercial art, which means I'm going to be sitting behind a computer for most of my career. So I tell parents, like, your child has to consider that right now. But it doesn't matter which area they want to go into. If they go to school for art their freshman year, they are going to have a drawing class. They are going to have a basic painting class. And then it's usually in their second year, the sophomore year, that they start to specify in their discipline. So my pitch to them is, no matter what you want to go into, you need solid, at least, drawing skills. And I can give that to you. And you can get the jump on the, you know, the college, you know, whole education by doing it while you're a teenager.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah. I'm just, you know, sitting thinking about all the people that I knew in high school and know now, you know, teenagers and stuff that, I mean, you look at their notebooks, look at any blank space, and there's no blank space. Yeah. Like, it's all filled in.
Yeah.
And because there's just so much in the mind that has got to get out, and they want to get it on a piece of paper, and it's, you know, it's healing and life-giving. And boy, to be able to do that on a whole nother level could really be, you know, transformative for them.
And that's why drawing is the fundamental skill. So, and a lot of people come in and they'll start with painting with me. There's always a drawing aspect to it. But I try to hammer home that even when you're painting, you're still drawing. I mean, drawing by definition is you're making marks on a flat surface. So whether you have a pencil, a pen, a piece of charcoal, or a brush that's loaded with color, you have to put that brush in the right place and the right shape to communicate an idea. So again, drawing, everyone benefits from focusing, every artist, every potential artist benefits from really focusing on mastering drawing. It is the fundamental skill.
Yeah. That's very cool. That's very cool. What are you working on now, Nielsen?
Well, I have a painting that is sitting right behind you for a parish in Nebraska. It's a parish renovation that they're working on. So it's a painting of the Holy Family. Mary, Joseph holding baby Jesus, and actually he's nursing. So Mary is nursing the child Jesus. That's a painting that's going out to a parish in Lincoln, Nebraska. I do a lot of work now for a local company called the St. Jude Shop in Havertown. So the St. Jude Shop, they sell Catholic paraphernalia, but they also do liturgical and church design. As a matter of fact, they were the ones that did the interior, the redesign of St. Patrick Church here in Kennett Square.
Oh, okay.
So the work I'm doing for them, I've been doing a lot of design work for them. I'm involved in a big project where I'm designing mosaics for a church in West Virginia. So I do the designs, and then it gets sent off to a mosaicist that will translate my design into mosaic, and then that gets, you know, put in the parish in West Virginia. I have another painting of the Holy Family I have to get started for a church in Maryland. So I am blessed to be very busy. So,
that's very cool.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, congratulations. Yeah, that's fantastic. You. Nick, do you have a final question you want to ask?
No, I think I'm just overwhelmed by what you've told us now.
Yeah. Well, Nielsen, thank you for joining us today on A Place in the Conversation. And as always, you know, I'm just always blessed every time that we get to spend some time together. So thank you for carving a little bit of time out of your day. And everybody who's listening, I just pray that you've been blessed. And just know that we have a true gift here in Kennett. in Nielsen and the Carlin Academy for Fine Art. And again, there's going to be a link where you will be able to find more information, and you know, at least visit the website. There's just, you'll see all of the work that he's done, and it's certainly worth taking some time and perusing that.
Thank you, Pastor Dan. Nick, nice to meet you.
Yeah. So everybody, until next time, may you sense the Spirit alive, well, and working in your world.